My name is Jonette Gay, and I'm the pastor of Otterbein United Methodist Church. I have with me today our media specialist.
Hi, Jason Burgess.
And we want to talk and we want to listen. Our faith is seen and understood in many topics. We're glad you've tuned in today to Hey Hey, anybody listening? Welcome. Today I have with me Bob Garvey, the Reverend Bob Garvey.
Yes. Greetings.
Glad to have you here.
Greetings.
Well, I just think Bob is an interesting guy and I wanted to just share with you or you share with us. I asked him, Jason, if there were some certain words that sounded, you know, Texas twang, and he said, all of them.
Yeah.
All of my words sound a little bit not. So you are not from Texas, are you? You are from Lancaster.
I am from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I was born and raised here. I was born in Lancaster General Hospital right down the street. And yeah, I've lived here most of my life.
Okay. Yeah. And you have quite an interesting story. I want to know a little bit about your call to ministry. You didn't start out as a pastor with your first job.
You
didn't even start out in church, I hear.
I did not start out in church.
So tell me a little about this call to ministry.
Well, we'll go way back to little Bobby. My mother had some negative church experiences when she was growing up. Nothing horrific, just the church people in her life weren't very nice people, which unfortunately happens sometimes. And so she concluded very early that if that is what church is, I don't want anything to do with it. And that stuck with her growing up. And so by the time I came around, church was a place where judgmental people went and hypocritical people went and mean people went. And we were going to stay clear of them. And so I grew up in, it's fair to say, a very anti-church environment. And yet my mother, who still holds those views, even though her son's a pastor, is still one of the kindest, most loving people I know. She would give me books that were on virtues, of the virtue of honesty and courage and things like that. She had found certain series to tell these stories, right? So she had her kind of moral education that she gave me, but it was outside of the church. Yeah, so that, I find that interesting. How it helps me now is I'm very aware of how scary it is to come into a new church, that, you know, you're not part of that community.
Okay.
For somebody who's been born and raised in the church, they have no idea how terrifying it is for somebody to walk into a new church. And so I have to help our folks at West Willow understand, you know, maybe just the psychological barriers that people put up to come into church. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I'll throw this out there, because I find on one hand, I am brokenhearted that churches can be so mean and judgmental, right? But show me one group of human beings that is not mean and judgmental, and I will show you a group that's probably not alive. But I think the expectation of churches is that they should be better, yet there is zero place in the Bible that throws out that expectation, right? That it clearly says we are a broken lot that can't save ourselves, and we need someone to do that for us. So, yeah.
So you grew up not churched, and then what happened?
So I met my wife, who I met in sixth grade, during a field trip, but we were just good friends for a long time. And then finally, when I had matured to the point that she would have me, she said, I would like us to be a church family. She had a totally opposite experience growing up, that she loved church. She loved her pastor. She loved her youth group and everything. She said, I would like us to be a church family. And I was smart enough. I still tear up every time I tell this story. I was smart enough just to say yes. Yes, I'm open to that. And God said, that's all I need, Bob. That's it. That was just a little crack in my armor. And then he went to work on me. Yeah. All right. Although, you know, as a proper Methodist, the prevenient grace was showering down upon me at all times. But finally, I kind of moved a little bit towards him. And he said, all right, let's get this thing.
So God was kind
let's get this thing moving.
Wooing you.
Yeah.
Well, you were, so you started going to church. And then when was the step into, I want to be a minister? Because you had a secular job, probably paid well. And
yep, I was in corporate sales. So I had a secular job that paid very well. And, you know, it was slowly God helped me take the walls around my heart down. Slowly.
Okay.
Brick by brick by brick by brick. And so I was, we were in a contemporary church where you could have coffee in the service. You could wear flip-flops in the summer, rock and roll band. And first thing you know, I'm volunteering to read announcements before the service, and then I'm doing prayers, and then I'm filling in for the pastor as they go on vacation. I'm preaching and finding that I enjoyed preparing sermons. You know, it was funny. I think the first time I was ready to preach a sermon, he gave me a sermon. Here, you can preach this. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna preach somebody else's sermon. I can't do that. So even from the start, I knew I had something to say. And I was just affirmed throughout that process. And it was still a couple of years of me praying, God, what do you want me to do? I knew corporate America was not it. And then sooner or later, it was God tapping on my shoulder saying, this is it. I want you, the way I heard it was, I want you to come work for me. And I promptly said, no. No way. No way. I'm not interested. And that was a conversation that went back and forth for years. Years. Until finally I said, I give up. I give up. I submit, you know, and here I am.
You know. Wow. Well, a couple of things. Bill Wilson said that in God's economy, nothing is wasted. So perhaps your years of being in sales in the corporate world has helped you, maybe with finance meetings, long-range plannings. Do you feel it's helped you in the ministry?
It's funny how that works, right? There is nothing lost. Nothing lost. And so I understand strategy. Hey, you know, next year we want to implement these new ministries or these new projects. Here's our human resources as far as volunteers. How do we best utilize them? Here's our budget. How do we market the church? How do we get, you know, right? Nothing lost at all. In addition, I think what has served me, corporate sales, it was very high pressure, where you were expected to hit a sales number or you lost your job. And I lost my job many times. And so that type of pressure has kind of insulated me when things start to get hard in the church. It gives me some perspective, and so it doesn't feel like a lot of pressure. Here's the weirdest thing about that. I feel like I am exactly where God wants me to be, and so there is very little pressure. So somebody doesn't like or approve of me, or within the conference they might want me to move or this. I am exactly where God wants me to be, and that gives me such peace.
That's great. You're not using this in a small town church as a stepping stone, which some people might. You're not climbing up the ecclesiastical ladder. You are happy.
It is the exact opposite. Yes, I would be thrilled if this was the only church I ever served. Yes, so I'm going to tell my Westwillians to listen to this podcast. If you hear it, I love you. I love you. I never want to leave. Jenny Freimoyer, never, ever.
This is good to hear. It's very good to hear. But I do think there's also something different in the church in the metrics the things that you measure are not the same as the corporate world. What do you feel that's different in the church as far as measuring that makes it?
Oh, my. So, on one hand, I think it's good to keep the hard metrics in the conversation, right? Are we growing the church attendance-wise, right? Are giving and our financial metrics, are we in the black? Can we at least pay our bills? Like, these are important things, but it's not the only thing, and it's not even the primary thing. I'm still trying to measure kingdom metrics, right? Changed hearts. Where somebody comes up after me and just says, that song we sang reminded me of something and I moved closer to God, right? That's such a blessing. And yet, how do you put that on a balance sheet, you know? Or somebody just says, I'm less afraid today because of you and what you've done. Those, you know, and they matter, and they affect the health of the church, but they're not invisible, right? They're very real, but they're just hard to grasp.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. something I wrestle.
Okay.
That's something I wrestle with. I don't know if I told you this when we had coffee. I was worried when I went full time. I was expecting the church to explode. Hey, Pastor Bob's full time now. Look out. Here we go. And it shrank, right? And this was even separate from COVID issues, but we were shrinking, and I was talking to some of my pastor buddies bemoaning, oh no, what do you do? And what they said was amazing. They said, Bob, your job is not to be a successful pastor. I'm like, what? What do you mean? They said, your job is to be a faithful pastor. If you do that, everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Be a faithful pastor. You and God, worry about that. Everything else will take care of itself. Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
Yeah. Tell me something, Bob, that excites you about the ministry. Tell me something that gives you, energizes you.
How much time do we have?
You have all the time you want.
All the time you want. So, to see somebody who is very far away from God, who has got this narrative in their head of the brokenness of the world, the pain and the suffering, that God is nowhere close to them, or if he is, he's a jerk because he's allowing all this to happen. To have them somehow become spiritually enlightened, that sounds weird, but to have the light bulb come on, like, wow, there is a God, he is real, he is pure love, and I can have an explanation for why maybe these things are happening, and their life is turned around, and they're filled with hope and joy and love and grace. To be a part of that, right? Just even to see it it's amazing. Yeah, and I get to do it. I get to see that. It's my job. So that is, you know, that never gets old at all. Like, not even close. Joy. The joy of ministry. Yeah, it's cool. Sometimes you can appreciate this. Ministry's hard. Ministry's messy. And sometimes we were like, oh, this is so hard. It's not. It's perspective, right? It's perspective. Hard is working a job you hate. You barely can make enough money. Your bosses are jerks and they abuse you. And you have a terrible home life, your marriage is a wreck, and kid, you know what I mean? Like, there's hard. This is joyful. That's, yeah.
That is good.
That's good.
Good to hear. You tell me that you work with recovery groups. Is that?
Yes.
How is that?
So, okay, this is going to sound absolutely weird. May I take off my sweatshirt?
Yes, sure. You may.
I'm heating up.
You may do whatever you need.
Listeners, the pastor's taking off his sweatshirt. Keep the t-shirt on.
One time I walked here and it was snowing and I had on a coat and a sweater and a scarf and gloves, and I got hot by the time I got here, so I was taking everything off. And when I took the sweater off, my choir director Bill said, one more and I'm leaving.
So, all right, so I developed the habit when I was a young man and a young teenager of drinking alcohol, right? It was my coping mechanism. The men in my family were drinkers, and so I wanted to be a beer drinker when I grew up, right? That was my aspiration. And that turned into a 25-year habit of abusing alcohol, okay? Got through that with God's help, definitely with God's help. And afterwards, right, so when I turned 40, I said, I'm done. The plan was to stop drinking for a decade. That was the plan, because it was inconceivable that I was going to stop drinking forever. Inconceivable. But I had stopped drinking on my own for a year. But as alcoholics call it, I was white knuckling it. Like, I was just didn't change my attitude towards drinking. I just stopped. But I was counting down the days, you know, until I could drink again. And my year was up, and I just went back to drinking and getting drunk. So I said, 10 years, I really have to change my attitude, because I'm not willing to just white knuckle it for a decade. That's insane, right? Mm-hmm. And so my thinking changed. Got close to 10 years, and I said, it would be absolute insanity just to go back to drinking when my life has never been better. Okay. So now I am, I'm 51, so 11 and a half years, right, sober. Asked God, what, come on now, what was that, 25 years of hell, of addiction, and you know, I kind of have the narrative down. This is kind of what I felt that God said. He said, I taught you things through that experience that you would have never signed up for on your own. Never. Compassion, humility, submission, right? Grace, tons of grace. All of which are really good things for a pastor, right? And so now I have been trained in the fires, right, to be an amazing pastor. So now 25 years of alcoholism turns out to be the biggest blessing in my life. What? If that ain't the good news, I don't know what is. And so I can go into, you know, folks who are struggling with this, I say, you're not going to believe this. Not in a million years. But what you're going through, the hell you've been through, when God gets in and turns your life around, you'll be thankful for all of it. Wow. Yeah. Right? It's amazing. And now, so right, I'm blessed with this experience. I'm blessed to be, here's the great thing about alcoholics and people who are at the bottom. They don't get caught up in stupid church politics. They don't get caught up in what hymns we're singing or rock and roll songs or what we're supposed to wear to church. They are the most grateful people just to know that God loves them. And so it cuts through all of the conversations that might be important, but they're not the conversation.
And do you find that they're aware of their brokenness?
Yes.
Whereas some people who've...
You know, I'll preach about brokenness and sin, and some folks will kind of look at me like, yeah, I know you're not talking to me, Pastor. Like, are you talking to people behind me? And folks who are in recovery are nodding their head. They're like, yep, that's me. I was saved. And, you know, so it's refreshing.
So there's an honesty there, and what a beautiful way that you talked about the grace that you learned through the hell.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if, in addition to the honesty now when you're in recovery, when you're in the midst of an addiction, sometimes there can be pretty sophisticated deceit. And maybe that's another thing that Bill Wilson is right about when saying that, in God's economy, nothing's wasted. You can't BS a BSer, that maybe you can see through, you know what I'm saying? Or do you know what I'm saying about the honesty? But if you're in the midst of an addiction, you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jason is also in recovery, and he's been open about that in his podcast.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know you liked him, huh?
Of course. Yes.
2 years now.
Okay.
Or will be the end of next week. So
we have a young man who's dealing with some addiction challenges at church, and I gave him an accountability team, and it's all recovery guys, because they have grace beyond your imagination, and they're used to lying, and they're used to cheating, and they're used to all the things that addicts do. And a normal person would be put off by that. Like, I can't work with this person, you know. But these guys, none of that will faze them, you know. So they've been handpicked, and they all feel the same way about that it's a blessing. It's a blessing. Like, what? Yeah. So, right, I mean, and the other thing about our little recovery ministry in church, a lot of these guys will go to multiple meetings a week through AA. The online resources for recovery groups are amazing. So they're doing church 4 or 5 times a week, not once on a Sunday, you know? And those meetings sometimes are way better than Sunday worship as far as authentic sharing and vulnerability and, you know, it's crazy.
A real sense of reality, you know, versus...
There's no BS in those groups. Yeah, unless they're.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the subject I hear you are, is it called jitsu?
Jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Tell
Brazilian,
me about that.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
I hear you're into this. So it is. What is it and what is the attraction?
That's another joy. Another joy. So, jiu-jitsu is primarily grappling. There's no striking, so there's no punching or kicking. It's submission holds or choking and things like that. I find it to be a wonderful physical, mental, and spiritual workout. Physical, because you are rolling, is what they would call it. You're rolling with another guy. It's very physical.
Now, our listeners can't see you, but you are tall and muscular. Does that help?
I am 6'3", 230 pounds, 51 years old, probably the best shape of my life. Even including the times I was a Division I football player, it does not help at all. I'm one of the bigger guys in the gym that I roll. Does not help. In fact, it hurts you.
That's humbling.
It hurts you because I want to use my strength to try to do these submissions and stuff, and so my muscles get tired really quick. Right, and these guys know that, and so they'll wait till the pastor gets tired, and then they wrap me up and choke me out. So it's a good physical workout. Mentally, you're trying to figure out what is the next move. How do I get myself in a position where I can submit this guy? And then spiritually, I have never failed so much in my life. Never failed so much and embraced it. Yeah, and so that has taught me a lot about what it means. It is impossible in jiu-jitsu to get better without failing. It's impossible. Gosh, it's really impossible to get better at anything without failing. Yeah. And yet we run from it like it's the plague.
Yeah, sort of makes me think of the cross and how powerful, whereas some might see a failure, how powerful this
submission
imagery is. Yeah.
Submission.
Some people call the cross the miracle of restraint. When Christ could have called 10,000 angels, a miracle of restraint.
That is one of my favorite thoughts about Christ. That, right? When Peter was striking down the guard, wax off his ear. He's like a legion of angels in a heartbeat. And I say, you know, these are not little cherub angels. These are the angels of death that wiped out all of the firstborn of Egypt. That would, in a blink of an eye, wipe out the world. He could have done that. And he said, no, forgiveness. Forgiveness is the... I mean, how beautiful is that? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's...
So jiu-jitsu. I also still play rugby with the local Roses team. So that's another thing. And so here's the interesting thing about that. By and large, the rugby community is not a church-going community. And so for some guys, I'm the only pastor they know. You know? And so I get a chance to minister to them and to help them. When I first started playing, I didn't say, hey, I'm a pastor. I kept it on a low down. And so many times that first year or two, guys would come up to me and say, hey, is it true? And I'd be like, well, I knew it was coming. Is what true? They're like, are you a Are you an effing pastor? No, I'm just a regular pastor. Cut that out if you want to. But
yeah, that's great.
Right? And they couldn't believe that I was a pastor. Like, are you really? You're a pastor? And they would say everything. But,
right.
Yeah, wow. But it's been a wonderful ministry. Yeah.
Well, you tell me, since this is the season of holidays are approaching us, and we had coffee across the street from the Unitarian Church, and you tell me a story I thought was beautiful about a Christmas Eve service there. Just what the pastor said to you, I thought was.
So the pastor, so I should say, because this is going to help somebody, before we would go to Christmas Eve service, that was the only service we would go to. When I was, you know, early 20s, probably before I met my wife, we would go to the Christmas Eve service. But we would always sit down, we'd have a couple beers with dinner and kind of get loosened up. That was how we would go in. So I'm going into church with a buzz, right? Horrible. That's how mom got us in the church, right? And there was a Christmas Eve service where the pastor said, I only can get away with this on this one night each year. But he said, I love you. I love every one of you. And I was so touched. It was courageous. Even in a Unitarian church, you know, it was courageous. And now I think, why don't I say that? I should say that every service. Yeah. So there's a challenge for me.
Well, I just love it because the imagery of Christmas is love coming down.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a hymn that love came down at Christmas. And so that imagery of the word in the flesh, the lived love. I just felt it, you know.
I love, you probably know this more than me, but there are certain denominations where Christmas and the incarnation are more important than the resurrection. But I'm not sure exactly which they, but it's beautiful, right? The fact that God came down is the thing. It's not the tomb and it's not Easter. It is the incarnation, the wonder of that.
Well, the word in the flesh, I see in you, Bob, and I know your church is fortunate to have you because I see it in you. It's not just, doesn't feel like it's just words you say. It feels like it is your life. It's who you are.
Do you know who showed up at service on Sunday?
Who?
Dr. Catherine Williams from LTS. She's my preaching professor.
Lancaster Theological Seminary, for those of you who don't know.
I preached the worst sermon I had in months. Can't believe it.
And
she loved it. She loved it. She said, good. I got a good word. I got what I needed today,
good.
Bob.
Yeah, that's good. Blessed you.
Yeah. She's never showed up at our church ever, right? Yeah. But Dr. Williams, nice to see you.
Well, I don't know why. It just reminds me of this story of a friend of mine when he was in seminary. He and his wife went to hear Henry Nouwen, and he was, you know, famous author. And as people are leaving the auditorium, he went up to Henry, who was on the stage. And Henry, I think, was over 6 foot tall. And people are trickling out. And my friend John said, Father Henry, how can I believe in God? And Henry jumped off the stage and he hugged John so tight that John could feel Henry's heartbeat against his own. And he let go and he walked away and he never said a word. And John said, he knew I didn't need an apologist. He knew I was wounded and I needed to know somebody cared.
Wow.
So I think I see that in you, that you want to be the love with each other and not just have the right words.
It was another, I think it was a Catholic priest. I forget his name, but he said, joy is the surest sign of the presence of God. And that is, right, what I hold on to.
So the scripture, the joy of the Lord is my strength. Do you feel that's true?
Yes.
It is your strength. It is.
Yes, it is what drives. It drives me, right? There's times for seriousness and reflection and, right? And so sometimes I come across as salesy. And I'm effusive in my praise to people. Because I will find something I can praise them with. It is never disingenuous, ever. Right, but it feels that way because oh, he's a sales guy, right? And so I had to kind of learn to tone it down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Cause, right? Yeah. Cause especially if people are wary of preachers, you know, and being sold as a bill of goods. But then it's funny, a lot of people are like, after they get to know me, like, oh, he really
know who you are.
But some people, right, they're put off, like, dude, he's
a friend of mine is a pastor who went through a lot of divorce and different things, and she said some people would tell her that she made lemonade too soon. You know, that old saying, well, you take the lemons and you make lemonade. She said they would tell her, you make it too soon. First, we need to feel the pain and not, so don't just be happy immediately. And I thought that was interesting.
I love that. You make lemonade too soon. It's never too soon. Never. Ever. See?
Yeah. But
that's a problem. I'm learning. Here's what I'm finding as I continue, that there's so much good in the world. Mm-hmm. Right? There is so much good. There's so many people who want to help and want to love and want to serve. And if you look for it, but you got to look for it. And you can't constantly look for the bad or the pain or the trauma, because you'll always find that too, right? It's just when I see somebody who's broken and ready to give up, it's like, how do I get them to open their eyes to see all of these people around them who love them and are trying for, you know, trying to help them? But I think that would be, don't give up. The world is, it's still good. Yeah. It's still good.
Anything you want to ask Bob? If it's,
I don't know. What time is your service? I'm run over there after this one. So.
It is at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings.
You can make the 8 if you rush back.
8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. Ooh, can I say one more thing?
Yes.
One more thing. So I grew up, I was a skeptic, right? Wait, two things and I'm done. This is it.
All right.
For people who are like, well, he's not as much of a skeptic as I am. Oh, yeah? How about this? When we were doing marriage counseling, right, before Kim and I were going to get married, there was a Church of the Brethren pastor who Kim knew, and we went through counseling, and I said, all right, dude, you can marry us, but you cannot say the name of Jesus. Now, this guy, as a professional pastor, had every right to go, hey, dude, go pound sand, right? I'm a cleric, whatever. And he didn't. He said, okay. And that, to this day, is my best example of grace. Because I was looking for walls. I was looking for people to put up walls, and he would have been another example of why I didn't go to church. Instead, he said, okay. So I saw that guy 20 years later at a ministerium breakfast. He had no idea what happened to that punk that wouldn't, who requested not to say Jesus. And I saw him. I said, you remember me? He's like, no. I said, married Kim and blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, yeah. I said, I'm a pastor now because of you. What a beautiful story. The other thing I was going to say, if you have hang-ups about the Bible or God or theology, there is a lot of people who have those same hang-ups. Many of them, most of them are smarter than me, and some of them have devoted their entire lives to trying to answer that question, why does God show up this way or that way? And so you just have to look for it, right? So many other people have tried to answer these questions, and we have them in libraries. It gives me great comfort. I'm not the only one that doubts. Right, but there's logical answers. It's good. Don't give up. Don't give up.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for listening, and I hope you will tune in again to Hey Hey, Anybody Listening. Glad you were with us today, and I hope you'll tune in again as we listen to one another.